Well, GMP fans, in honor of Michael Bay's franchise, we're covering Transformers, a franchise in disguise. Transformers, these movies make me cry.
Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies. And now, here's Popcorn Talk's Guilty Movie Pleasure.
What's happening?
Yes.
I don't know, just keep introducing goofy human characters. Oh, man. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, all 25 fans, 5 of you real, 20 of you bots. We're very excited. We're very excited. We're not even going to dick around today.
No dicking around.
No dicking around, because I have 5 pages of notes on this
movie.
We
have a strict no dicking policy today.
So I wanted to see Transformers the last night before today's episode. I haven't had a chance to, because I want to see it in IMAX. And since the movie's so fucking long, I can't see it. I've never been able to schedule. It's almost 3 hours with trailers and everything.
Yep.
It's shorter than the last one, though. Transformers Age of Extinction.
So it's getting worse, is what you're saying.
Something's happening. But here's the thing. Before we start getting into any of this, I remember seeing the first Transformers movie and loving it, thinking it was awesome. Seeing the second one and absolutely hating it.
Mm-hmm.
And then seeing this one, like the last week it was still available in 3D, because I was like, well, I heard it was shot in 3D, whatever, I'll see it. And be like, oh, it's pretty cool. Because it's really easy to rebound from Revenge of the Fallen. It's such a low bar to hurdle over. You really can't get much worse than Revenge of the Fallen, the second one.
Because
it's a clusterfuck of makes no sense, his mom's high at the campus, and that awful, awful stuff. What I will say about these movies, and even this one, Tony Morrow, shout out to Tony, he actually tweeted us a video review
that I
100% agree with.
He tweeted at both of us, but then he addressed only you in his video. So
thank you, Tony.
This podcast is not for, from my perspective, not for Tony.
Well,
I'm just kidding. I love you, Tony.
No, but I actually agreed, and I think I even retweeted it saying I agree 100%, which is that the first hour and a half or so is real hit or miss for me, but then that last battle in Chicago from the car chase on is like classic Bay, the Rock Bay, style.
When you say Bay, do you mean BAE?
Like, I mean, like before anybody else.
Yeah.
A classic before anybody else Transformers movie.
Yeah.
No, but I mean, there's some really awesome shit in the action sequences, and they're fun, but this movie has every single Transformers movie that I've ever seen after the first one, because the first one was just kind of like a fun movie, has had equal moments, well, at varying degrees, of moments where I'll go, and I text you this, where I'm watching this, and I'm like, fuck yeah! And then, like, 2 minutes later, I'll be like, fuck you! To the movie, because it's just like, it just, every, there's so much I love and so much I hate about these movies.
Sure.
But I still keep going. I still keep going. The last one I thought was abysmal, Age of Extinction. It was 2 hours and 44 minutes of Mark Wahlberg being like, I'm an inventor. I'm from Boston. I invent things. I'm an inventor, all right? That's the worst.
What?
That's the worst.
Was that Mark Wahlberg?
It was more like a lazy Christopher Walken.
Was that Channing Tatum?
Anyways, I'm going to keep rambling about this. I want to get into the movie. What did you... You had never seen it.
I had never seen it. I saw the first one,
and I loved the first one,
I was completely out on.
Yep.
And
the writer's strike did fuck that one up a little.
I mean,
more Bay
before anybody else. But yeah, there's a lot of conflict for me in this as far as, like you said, there's a lot that works and a lot that doesn't, and there's no filter. It's just like, I want to do all of these things, and it's not
and
cohesive.
No checks and balance.
And it's very, like, it just feels like a spoof of a spoof of the original.
Yeah.
It just keeps getting broader and broader.
It's
and broader.
As if President Trump directed a movie.
Yeah.
It's like as if President Trump directed a Transformers film, is what this feels like.
A little bit. Yeah, it's just like all over the place.
It feels like Zack Snyder, if Zack Snyder was a total dick. Like, Zack Snyder movies, and his movies have a style to them.
Sure.
They look really cool. They don't have a lot of substance, but at least, like, I feel like he's trying to some degree, especially with, like, Watchmen. I feel like he was really trying to service the graphic novel. And same thing with 300. Batman v Superman was just kind of too many things. But I always feel like, even though I don't necessarily really dig Zack Snyder stuff, there's at least some things that I'm like, oh, there's something there. This, I feel like Michael Bay, ever since Bad Boys 2, and I posted a thing for a Twitter poll on there, when did Michael Bay start just giving the middle finger to the audience? And I really think it started with Bad Boys 2. Because as much as I love Bad Boys 2, it's fucking... The thing that blows my mind that we'll get into in this movie and Bad Boys 2 and a lot of his stuff, human life, there's no regard for it. There are countless moments in this movie where I'm like...
Human life? Talk about, like, rebuilding your city's infrastructure. Like, roads, buildings, bridges.
We'll get into it.
Everything goes down in this.
For the writers out there, screenwriters out there, Michael Bay, I feel like, has never heard of Save the Cat, which is where you give the hero a moment to do something heroic, and the metaphor is saving the cat to make the audience go, that's why I'm rooting for you. It's like every single chance he gets, it's like, fuck it.
Well,
just forget the cat.
It's a problem because, like, I could ask you right now who the hero is, and who would you tell me?
Guess Optimus, but not really.
But not really, right?
I would say
either Optimus or Bumblebee or Sam. It's one of those three people.
But none of
slash
that.
Bots.
Sam's a dick this whole
That's
movie.
That's the whole point.
He's
of
a dick.
Like, a lot of the inconsistencies come here.
Yeah.
It's because they, like, try to put him in this position of saving the day and, like, swooping in and being this underdog. But he's so entitled and dickish to everyone that it's like...
He's like, don't you know I saved the world? You saved the world twice. Fuck you, all right?
Yeah.
And he always has this kind of like, this is my Shia LaBeouf in this movie.
Right.
Or is that Channing Tatum?
I think that might have been Channing Tatum doing a Shia LaBeouf impression. He's so unlikable in parts, and he's just like, has so much.
Yeah.
Like, he lives in a two-story, what would you say, like, million-dollar loft in the middle of the city that he pays nothing for.
Bitches about
He has a model girlfriend.
Makes no sense.
He's only been out of school for 3 months. He has a presidential medal. Like, go fuck yourself, man.
Yeah, fuck you.
Like,
he is the epitome of, that thing where you're entitled and it's, oh, fuck. I'm going to remember it. It's a disease.
Okay.
It's a disease.
Cancer.
No.
Okay,
no.
Then I don't know.
It's a disease where you feel so entitled that you feel like a lack of... Oh, damn it! We have it in our show. I'll have to text Renee.
All right.
Renee knows it.
Munchausen syndrome.
Yes, exactly. Anyways, whatever. I'm getting off track. Let's do the plot in another 3 minutes, because then I want to get into this clusterfuck of awesomeness and terribleness. Because
right.
I love parts of it, but I'm telling you, Michael Bay, what it is he has nobody, and I know, I'm pretty sure this has been documented, he has no one saying no to him.
Yeah.
Because... He, at least Warner Brothers sometimes checks Zack Snyder. Like, Michael Bay, because his movies make $1 billion, he can do whatever the fuck he wants. He can have, in Bad Boys 2, them drive through a shanty town where we're supposed to think that it's all meth labs and no people live there, but, like, there are probably people that they were driving through with these Humvees and
Highly
stuff.
Likely. And they do the, like, throwing cars out of the back of a truck on a freeway.
Yeah. In it's this one, like... the freeway chase in this one... Where the Autobots get chased down by the Decepticons, and then there's no single moment where Bumblebee or Optimus or any of the other unnamed Transformers that you don't really get to know tries to save anyone but Sam. There's hundreds of other people dying on this freeway, and they're like, fuck, we gotta save Sam.
But the best is we never see the aftermath of it. We like, you know, you watch it and you're like, all these people are dying. And then, like, it's just that part is discarded. Like, a Zamboni comes through and just like wipes the whole
slate. It's just like
clean.
The Mummy, how we were saying, how like they just shot a bunch of innocent people that were possessed by the Mummy. Also, just a quick sidebar, if Jesse and I look like we're sweating or super red faced,
or if either one of us collapse in the middle of this,
it's because the air conditioner is on the fritz here and it's starting to feel like it feels like someone just crawled up above us and is going.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like air yet.
It's just, there's no circulation. It's just a small trickle.
So miserable.
Of like,
all right.
Room temperature air feels
cold
right now.
We're going to do this plot in under 3 minutes right now. God, here goes. In 3, 2, 1. Oh, God, here we go.
Shit.
Oh, shit, here we go. It's fine. We'll go. So we start off opening voiceover, war on Cybertron, and Sentinel Prime left with the last thing that could restart our world. Because the Decepticons are dicks, and we're super awesome. We're for freedom. And then we do this like long 8-minute thing where the moon landing was actually to find out what was up there. And they go, oh, shit, this is a big ship. And then they leave. And then we find out later on that they've been taking stuff back and forth from there.
And then I'll do the Shia LaBeouf part.
Yeah.
I got a supermodel girlfriend that has a butt shot
as soon as we start. My hero, he's a total dick to her. There's no reason why. He doesn't have a job.
Yep.
There's no reason she should be dating him. His parents show up in matching tracksuits in a giant RV, and they have a couple jokes that land and then like 18 that fail.
Yep.
And then, oh God.
Oh, and then he goes on some job interviews. He's fails at each one of them. He finally ends up with John Malkovich, where he hires him to be in the mailroom, and he convinces him that that's a good idea. He goes to visit his girlfriend at this rare car museum, I guess.
And her boss is an accountant.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
And she works at this accountant's rare car museum, and it's McDreamy, Patrick Dempsey. Mm-hmm. But we forgot that the Autobots are in Chernobyl, and they find Shockwave, and Shockwave runs off with the thing they needed or whatever and just disappears, and then they don't bother chasing him like in every action movie where it's like, okay, he just left. We can't go down that hole he just drilled in the ground. Frances McDormand comes in with a lot of bags. I said she has a lot of purses.
Yep.
She says, like, you're not important, Sam. And he's like, but I did stuff. I did a lot of things. And then Megatron, oh, God, I feel like this is so hard to remember. Oh, Megatron sets up the plan where Optimus and them go get Sentinel Prime from the moon, bring him back. They bring him back to life with the Matrix of Life or whatever bullshit they came up with in the second one. And then...
Meanwhile, the Decepticons are killing off everyone who knows about the moon landing. So they're coming after Ken Jeong, but not before Ken Jeong warns Shia LaBeouf. So Shia LaBeouf goes to the government, and he's like, I know what's happening here. We have to go get what's on the moon.
Yeah.
So they send
I missed that entire part.
Yeah, that's right.
Oh, shit. One minute.
Oh, boy.
So then they bring Sentinel Prime back. Long story short, it turns out that he was actually going to betray them. He blasts one of the Autobots. You don't know the name of the person. I don't remember. It kills him. Oh no, what's up? And then what happens is the Decepticons come in. They basically fuck everything up. They say, you gotta leave, Autobots. And the Autobots go, okay, I guess we gotta leave. And they go up in a shuttle. The shuttle explodes. Chicago is wrecked. They have all these pillars that they're trying to set up to bring Cybertron back. Do you want to take this?
Do it. And then and so they are trying to shoot down the main thing, the main
like every
column.
Action movie
yeah,
ever.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And then, fuck, no.
Okay. And then they're trying to, there's this big fight. Optimus gets wrapped up in these chains and blah, 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 and then he gets free, and then he's blessed, and then Megatron's just been chilling by a building the entire time, and Rosie Huntington, whatever, says, you're just Sentinel's bitch. He goes and fights Sentinel. Optimus fucks up Sentinel, Megatron then kills Sentinel, like, Tony Soprano style, and then he says, we'll never forsake this planet. Credits. That's it.
You having trouble with who was who and screwing up the names, like you, I would consider an expert, and me not being an expert, I was like, there's no way I'm going to get this right under pressure, so I'm going to just pass the ball
It's
back.
Okay. I feel like I can't tell if it's the air or my head exploding from doing that. Here's the thing right off the bat that drives me nuts about these movies, and I promise to talk about stuff I love about them too and not just bash on them, because I do love moments of them. I just wish these movies were about the Transformers. That they were about the Autobots versus the Decepticons, and not how do we throw in another weird cameo of somebody doing a strange accent or a strange character choice. There are more comedic relief characters in this movie than in a Judd Apatow film. There's more. Every 15 minutes, we meet another human character that if they were the one comedic relief of the movie, they would have been fucking hilarious. Like Alan Tudyk, by the time we get to him, it's like... an hour and 20 minutes into the movie, and he has some genuinely funny moments, but you get exhausted from it.
I was going to say he was the only one that I enjoyed.
I love when I'm just going to skip ahead to it.
Yeah.
Where they all draw guns on each other, and he smashes this like old lady bartender in the face, gets a gun out, and then he's like holding two guns, and he looks like a wild dog, and then... John Turturro speaks in what sounds like fake German.
Yep.
It sounds like... he's like, shush! Flush and douche and flush and sheesh. And I'm like, I don't speak German, but it sounds fake. And then Dutch, we're just going to play that sound clip because it's so funny. God, what is it? I know I'm skipping way ahead, so I don't even know. Fuck it. We'll find it. The old me, do you see it up? Oh, nine, clip number nine. It's so good.
I'm so sorry. That is the old me.
So he's just like wrecked this old lady's face and like went like about to shoot everybody, and then John Turturro, sashi fashi dashis,
and
just played again. So good.
I'm so sorry. That is the old me.
like the trance he's in drops, and
Alan
he realizes what's going on.
I wish that he was just the comedic relief from the beginning.
He was brilliant.
He's super funny. John Turturro is very hit or miss for me in these movies. It's like they just let him do whatever. I don't need him. And oof. Ken Jeong had some funny stuff, and then it just gets too extreme. But we'll get to that. So let's start where we should start, in the beginning.
Well, okay, but just to piggyback off what you were saying here, it should be about the Transformers.
Yes.
It should be.
And about an hour of the film is, but then there's like night, and that's the problem with Revenge of the Fallen, too, where Revenge of the Fallen is like 90-plus minutes of a college comedy. right. That's not funny.
And they're literally in this movie, they toggle back and forth between scenes so of humans weirdly, and Transformers. It's like
it's disjointed as fuck.
Yeah, and the human part, it's like, okay, we have the Transformer story. We know like the sequence of events, we have the axe, we have the arc, and we don't really know what to do with the people. And like you said, it's just comedic relief. So they were just like, let's just throw in a new funny bit every time.
Every time. Every time there has to be something quirky. They can't just have a normal scene play out.
Yeah.
It has to be like something's off or something's wildly misogynistic, which happens a ton.
Yeah.
We'll get to the Red Cup scene because that is such a dick move. Anyways, the thing is, if you took out all the human stuff and just made this a dark war movie about Optimus being betrayed by his mentor, which is kind of what that stuff is, it's awesome, and it gets gritty, and Optimus gets gangsta in this movie.
Yeah.
But you have to suffer through so much stupid shit to get to the awesome
yeah,
stuff.
And this,
I will say Michael Bay knows how to shoot. I mean, his everything looks like a postcard from Miami.
Totally.
It looks fucking beautiful. Sometimes a little too perfect. But all the Autobot fight scenes were very fluid. It wasn't like too choppy. I could pretty much see what was going on, which I dig. I dig all that stuff.
Yeah.
I just, anyways, what were you going to say?
A couple things. Like, I love the, like, we know it's going to be a dramatic moment because, like, the sun just starts to peek in and we get that one ray of sun into the dark room.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like, oh, here it comes.
It's 100% Bay.
Yep.
Before anybody else.
Yep.
So let's start off in the beginning. Let's play the opening VO, clip number one, please, because we get this awesome Cybertron battle sequence where we get to see Cybertron, I think, for the first time, if I remember right, in the cinematic universe. Yeah, I'm gonna say yes, definitively. Can we play that?
We were once a peaceful race
of
intelligent mechanical beings. But then came the war between the Autobots who fought for freedom and the Decepticons who dreamt of tyranny.
See, that just gives me chills, because Optimus Prime, it's fucking fantastic. Like, his voice is incredible, and it's the same guy from the cartoon series, so it's great. It has that nest, right?
Yeah. I don't know if it's the same guy from
now
the cartoon series.
Now I feel like
series.
An idiot. I'm sure it is, though.
That's interesting that you say that, because
sure
Yeah. I should do some research before these shows.
It's not necessary. We just say things and fingers crossed.
In this day and age, we can just say things and fix it later.
Doesn't matter.
Tweet out a response.
Guys, nothing matters.
We can retract it later.
Can we talk about that? Everything.
Jesus, nothing.
No. What I was going to say is there were a couple of the Transformers that I feel like they designed to fit the voice.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Like the smaller ones and the more character-y ones. And for some reason, I feel like there's a disjointed nature of Optimus's voice and the way he moves and carries himself.
He does look way more stoic, and then he just kind of comes in and wrecks shit.
Yeah.
Like, he comes in like he's going to be like, motherfuck you. I'm Optimus Prime, bitch. That's kind of more his action.
Yeah.
I do it great.
So it's, was that Channing Tatum?
Well, I mean, I do want to talk about, so they do this montage where, like, JFK's being sent all this stuff, and it's the creepiest CGI JFK ever. Yeah. It's really unnerving. And there's a cool premise behind this, that we find out that a lot of the stuff in human history was because, like aliens in some people's conspiracy theories in our actual world, that they've been among us all along. There's, like, this theory in the Transformers universe that they've been here since the beginning, and that they something crash landed on the moon and they found it, and I thought that was really cool. And then we have this awesome long ass Transformer sound, clip number two, for the title card. Super long.
Yeah.
Super long. That's me when I put together a Rubik's Cube. I'm just like...
Do you make those audibly?
Yeah. Because, I mean, the Rubik's Cube doesn't make it. It's not that cool.
That would be cool if you
That would
got
be
one
a great invention. A Rubik's Cube that makes Transformers sound effects.
Someone get on that.
But specifically Michael Bay Transformers.
Although the problem with that is if you're in class and you're trying to sneak Rubik's Cube time.
You gotta have it turn off.
Yeah, sound off.
I feel a little more air. So we get this whole long-ass build-up about... I wrote, did they bring anything back or just see it and go, fuck, that's a big ship, see ya?
Kind of, right?
Because that's kind of what they do in the opening.
Yeah.
They're like, you have 30 minutes to go check this out. And they're like, Buzz Aldrin and Glenn, fuck, I'm not remembering anything because I'm having heat stroke right here. But the two men who went on the moon for the first
time.
The Knots.
Yeah.
They like, whoa, and then they just bounce.
So what I was thinking during this was like, that's awfully risky to like the first time you touch down on the moon, be like.
That's in front of the
also,
entire world. Yeah,
be like, also investigate this alien crash landing. Like, don't just get your bearings and then we'll come back. It's like.
It's a good point.
Yeah, like
what
touchdown.
If they've been murdered by like aliens.
Right.
And then they're like, hello? Buzz? Anybody? Knots?
Yeah.
Knots?
Do you remember their names? I forgot their names.
I forgot their names.
Knots.
It's something. God, I can't remember anything right now because it's
Neil Armstrong?
So, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
And then, so then we cut to, smash cut after the credits to an ass shot of Rosie Huntington Whiteley. I was right. Rosie Huntington Whiteley, Victoria's Secret model, a.k.a. the replacement from Megan Fox, because she said that she called Michael Bay Hitler, mm-hmm. and that didn't sit well. But now she's in the Turtles movies as April O'Neil, and that sits well with no one. Here's the thing. I have a disconnect immediately when it's fine to have Sam have a hot girlfriend. Like, sitcoms do it all the time. Like, King of Queens, she's way hotter than Kevin James. Like, even Home Improvement, his wife was kind of cuter than him. You know, so for years, comedies have put dopey dude with cuter or hotter girl. But when you put him with a fucking supermodel, it's like, come on.
Yep.
And then when you make him super unlikable for the entire... And when you show the intro of how they met, when she's like, oh, I remember the day you got that medal. And he's like, I do too. And then they show him freaking out when he meets Obama, another CGI thing.
No, it wasn't CGI. It was just a bad they just double. Like, they had him turning around.
It looks like Jordan Peele
or
something.
Yeah, kind of.
And then he like comes out with his medal, sees her, and like flings it around, and then weirdly makes
and
like
shoots her.
Makes a shooting gesture. And he's like, I got a medal. And then he breaks something super expensive in the White House, and that's how they fell for each other.
And also, what was she doing?
She was just standing there with glasses on, looking hot in the White House.
Her job was to stand in the White House, and then later she gets hired to
stand around,
organize a rare car museum. Like, what are her skills? I would love to know because she's so successful, and I want to know what
Michael
she does.
Michael Bay is just like, well, she's hot. Let's just do things that are hot too. Like, I like hot cars. I like hot babes.
It really feels like a lot of his thinking is like, you know what would be cool?
Exactly.
Like,
hey, you know what would be cool?
Hey, you know what would be cool?
You gonna be cool? He's gonna watch this and never cast me in any of his movies.
I hope he watches this.
I hope he watches it and then goes, you know what? That guy's got balls saying that about me.
And he'd be
me.
Like, hey, you know what would be cool?
You know what would be cool?
If we put these two guys in...
They'd be great comedic relief for the seventh time around.
Transformers 6.
So, can we play clip number 3? Because this is how Rosie Huntington Whiteley is introduced.
My hero needs to wake up.
I'm sorry, I almost vomited. My hero needs to wake up.
You know what's never happened to me before, and then we can riff on this, is me being asleep and someone from across the room gently coaxing me awake and me waking up. Yeah. That's never once happened.
You know, things no girlfriend has ever said to me, ever, or wife.
Yeah.
This one. Can we play it again?
My hero needs to wake up.
It just feels like the beginning of a porno.
Yeah. It's like she's not talking to Shia the human, but maybe like...
Every adolescent boy in the audience is like, oh, I got a boner from
that
underwear.
Oh, my hero's awake.
My hero's awake. We don't even need to riff on it. We have too much stuff. So we already talked about Ridiculous. The mom and dad show up in this RV with matching sweatsuits. All right.
Maybe the mom and dad are under contract, but like they were as unnecessary in this film as... I don't know, the red cup.
There's no point. It was just to have them come in and say a few goofy things. She brings out a book about like how to give Rosie an orgasm, or Carly is her name in the movie, so like how to give his girlfriend an orgasm. You're like, what? I get that you're trying to be funny, inappropriate mom, but just like, I feel like Michael Bay just lets all these comedians go off.
I guess.
And then they just keep it all.
But like, keep in mind context. Like, their shtick works when he's an adolescent at home and he's stuck there.
Yeah.
But when they're following him around, it's like, this isn't working anymore.
No.
We don't need it. We understood it. We got it the first time.
Let's play clip number 4, because this is one of the jokes that the mom says that actually cracked me up.
It doesn't change in anything. It's a collector's item. I got it for steel.
But it's Datsun.
Trust me.
No, I think it's darling. It reminds me a lot of Bumblebee. Bumblebee weren't a sad piece of shit.
That's such an unnecessary line, but it cracked me. If Bumblebee was a sad piece of shit, it has nothing to do with the movie. No mom would ever say that.
Yeah, and she like it sounds like that was like an improvised take, and she just bailed on her idea. She was like, "It looks like Bumblebee if he were a piece of shit." I don't know, but like the visual is already there. We don't need that joke.
Yeah.
So you know, it got a laugh, but like we don't really need these people at all.
We talked about how Shockwave comes out in Chernobyl, and Shockwave looks rad. This like it's almost like a Tremors Decepticon that comes out and fucks a ton of stuff up, and then just gets the it gets one of its limbs cut off, and then just bails. And they're like, "We can't follow it." That's my Optimus Prime impression.
That was really nice.
Thanks. That's all I can say is we can't follow it.
That, and strangely, like that voice fits you more than Optimus's voice fits him.
And then there's the Pterodactyl Decepticon. Who goes and kills the other dude and then just flies off. And this is one of the first of many scenes where something happens and then it's a hard cut to something completely different and tonally different. And we never really, like, this major incident happens where the guy who led the Autobots to Chernobyl gets murdered. There's no follow-up to the Autobots going, "Oh, shit, what happened?" It just goes, cut, Sam doing goofy work, interview montages. And you're like, what? Just don't do this. Keep going with the Autobots.
Right.
Keep doing, because I like that.
Because this movie is called
Transformers.
Transformers.
Not Sam Witwicky.
Yeah.
Oh, and all the names are so overt. Sam Witwicky. There's what was, and even in the new one, Cade Yeager is Mark Wahlberg's name. No one's name is Cade Yeager.
That's why they did it. They like
makes no sense.
They didn't want to pay homage to any particular person.
So we talked about John Malkovich, super tan.
Also another character
completely unnecessary.
So unnecessary.
Because he's in it for this one scene and we'll get to it. But let's do the Red Cup clip where he gets super mad about a woman. Mind you, this would have been funny if it was a dude, but because it's one of the only females on the floor, it's kind of misogynistic, and by kind of, I mean extremely. Just listen to this clip. Five?
Yes, Mr. Bezos.
Why is Chantel using what appears to be a red cup from the red floor when we are on the yellow floor?
I'm on it.
It is a visual and therefore a visceral betrayal. Stop it. I'm such a dumbass.
Jesus.
Thank you.
And then she just cries and runs off.
She runs off crying, yeah.
The fact that he says, such a dumbass, disgusting. That's Scott Krinsky, by the way, who's like a well-known comedic actor who was in Chuck. He has one line, and he walks by and says, such a dumbass.
Barely audible.
And you're like, why are there all these great comedic actors just thrown in here, just like...
I don't know.
Maybe the movie was 4 hours long.
But also that, like... they didn't really establish him enough to be like... He sends one of his goons to tell her to change the cup, and that would elicit a reaction of, like, crying and storming out of the office.
His character makes no sense.
Yeah.
And let's just cut ahead to, we'll just skip ahead a little bit, because we got a lot to cover, where basically Frances McDormand comes in. She's even quirky. She's great in it, though. I like her, but she's even quirky. She has a lot of bags. Like, there's even a joke there where she can't just be a hard ass. She has to have a lot of bags, and her assistant be like, which one? She's like, the chartreuse one or whatever.
I don't know if you know this, Ben, but women love handbags.
In Michael Bay's world,
it's one of their
women
favorite
are either hot
things.
Or they really love handbags, or they don't know they're colorblind.
Yep.
Women are colorblind in Michael Bay's world.
And very sensitive.
Very sensitive.
Very sensitive.
So stupid. God, Michael Bay. But it's so crazy because, like, technically, his movies look fucking awesome. It's just they're filled with so much just ridiculousness.
Yeah.
Which is part of, after a while, I just kind of give into it and laugh. But so they go to the moon. They get Sentinel Prime back. And then they bring him to life. So that happens. They bring him back. Then Ken Jeong shows up.
Yep.
And he's acting super weird. And there's this amazing, unnecessary but funny joke between him and this other comedic actor who's on Silicon Valley, and he was on Eastbound and Down, ton of stuff. I can't remember his name. But there's this awesome elevator fight interchange because Ken Jeong knocked a binder out of his hand in a scene that before that. I didn't even remember, but he's been stewing on it. Can we play clip number six?
I'm still stewing about that binder incident, Jerry.
May I finish my Shuhua milk?
I don't care about your exotic milk. I care about respect.
What? There's no need for that.
This
But I
mean, I do agree with your philosophy. Yeah. I don't care about your exotic milk. I care about respect. Same.
You know who
hashtag
doesn't,
same.
You know who doesn't care about respect? Michael Bay.
Michael Bay.
So Ken Jeong, his idea is he needs to tell Sam, because he knows who Sam is. He needs to tell him what's going on. So he confronts him in the stall, but in a goofy way. Like, there's no way. He could have just been like, hey, I know shit. I need to tell you. But instead, he mounts him on the stall, spreads his legs, then whips out the thing that has all his documentation of this big Decepticon plot from his underwear. So you even get like a joke where you think Sam's going to get mouth fucked or something. You're like, why is all this as funny as that is?
There's nothing funnier than a good old mouth fucking joke.
Threat of a mouth fucking.
Yeah, oh yeah, not actual mouth fucking. Those aren't funny. The threat of a mouth fucking.
But all of these jokes could work if it was like sparingly, but because you've already been pummeled with like by like minute hour, oh god, 45 minutes in already and nothing's happened.
Here's the other problem is like even the jokes are inconsistent. Like mm-hmm. It goes from slapstick to conversational humor to like smart and witty to visual. Like they're just they hit so many different genres of humor that even the shticks are confusing.
It gets super broad in moments.
Yeah.
Like when Ken Jeong, he gets attacked after he tells Sam, he gets attacked by his computer, which is the pterodactyl Decepticon again, and he's like, I'm fine, and he's doing like this really broad humor. He gets fucking thrown out the window, and this is one of the first of many instances where Michael Bay shows that there's no regard for human life, because this is John Malkovich's response to that. Clip number 7, please.
Come on, people, yes, a workmate died, but looking out the window is not gonna bring him back. The man was depressed.
Don't take a picture.
You can keep watching him, but he's not getting up. You all read Humpty Dumpty.
Well,
what? First off, how did he know he was depressed? Secondly, minutes, not even seconds later, the pterodactyl thing comes out, starts shooting up the place. John Malkovich is seemingly killed because he gets blasted off into like a bookshelf. And then Sam just runs down the hall. And then the scene again cuts to him driving with his girlfriend to Nest headquarters. And you're like, wait, why didn't you cut some of the comedy and show me how he got, make it an extended chase sequence through the office and like how he got out? Because did that pterodactyl thing just go, ah, curses, I can't go down hallways.
This is how the Transformers react to anyone running away.
They're just like,
oh, damn, I was ready to battle right here. not in a new place. I can't.
Yeah. Oh.
My skills don't travel.
And then Agent Simmons comes back in, Totoro's back. And then when he finds out that Megatron's back in business and shit's gonna hit the fan. We're skipping ahead a little bit because I have 5 pages of notes in 17 minutes. Clip number 8, please.
Tell Megatron, let's tango.
So that happens.
Okay.
I don't even know what to do with that one.
Okay.
Tell Megatron, let's tango. I mean, I'm sure there's a joke in there about a DJ in Vegas named Megatron, and I just wanted him to play some tango music.
Yep.
There we go.
Fill in the blanks.
So, fill in the blanks
Mad
there.
Libs, you guys.
But then Alan Tudyk's introduced, and he's one of my favorite characters in this movie, and I wish that they focused on him. I would be fine, even if Totoro gets kind of on my nerves a little, if he was introduced like 30 minutes in, and then he was the comedic relief with Alan Tudyk.
Yeah.
For the rest of the movie. So there's moments in here that I love where I'm like, yeah, like, I'm sorry, that's just the old me. I love, but then there's moments where I'm like, no, why are you whipping out your pants and straddling Shia LaBeouf in the, God damn it.
And then just like a couple of other slapstick moments when Shia LaBeouf is pretending not to be jealous of McDreamy.
Oh, God.
And they get that through the car shot of him just like laughing hysterically, trying to cover his insecurities. Like, where did that come from? That makes no sense.
There's no reason why Rosie Huntington-Whitley wouldn't be like, fuck you, you're kind of insecure. McDreamy is an accountant who has an exotic car collection.
Yeah.
Because that makes sense.
Right.
And he has me. They're in a building, supposedly, I guess, a showroom where people come look at them?
I guess.
What do people do there?
I guess. I don't know.
So then,
do you have to pay admission? How did he get in there?
So we're at the point, finally, where Tony said that it kicks in, which is where I agree. Where finally the Decepticons show up and the betrayal happens and there's this awesome freeway chase where shit hits the fan. There's like, they're going, and then John Turturro's thrown out of the back of a limo for no reason.
Yeah.
It's at like 60 or 70 miles per hour.
Yeah.
And he's just kind of like,
he's
later
like,
on
okay,
he,
just wheelchair bound.
Yeah, later on he just has like a cast on his leg. pretty sure that would have killed him. They totally bleep out an F-bomb by Shia LaBeouf. I rewound it twice.
Really?
Where he's like, drive, Bumblebee, fucking drive, or something like that. They bleep out. You see him say fuck, and it's like the audio cuts out it. But then
PG-13, dude.
Then there's people just getting, there's cars. The Decepticons are throwing cars with people in them. Never does an Autobot go, whoa, gotcha!
They knock over the sign. Like, how are people going to know how to get exit? Where they're going?
Come on.
This is just rude.
Bumblebee, there's a part where Sam gets thrown from the car. Bumblebee transforms and grabs him and then saves him. And Sam has a hilarious scream. Can we play clip number 10? You know what? That was me after getting through this entire movie where there were parts where I was like, yeah! And then there were other parts where I just went...
So,
when the 15th comedic relief character came out, that's how I reacted.
That's how you reacted? That's dramatic. I was walking outside before we started, and it's like... I don't know if you know this. It's a heat wave. It's super hot outside.
Here,
it's so hot. And I was like, that's cool. The studio will be air conditioned. And I walked into the studio and I was like.
So the thing I wrote down that's interesting is then the Decepticons show up where Sentinel Prime is. And he was going to betray them anyway. So he could have just betrayed them and skedaddled. They didn't need to be there. And the Decepticons have a Mexican standoff with the guys. And they all lower their guns. And then the Autobots just brutally rip them to pieces.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and because they're, this has happened several times with the Autobots, because they're machines, we're like, ah, cool. But on their world, they're living creatures. So imagine if, like, Batman and Superman were like, Joker's goons were like, haha, let's put our guns down. And then they just ripped the arms off of the goons, shoved them in a car, kicked them into a warehouse, and it blew up. Which, by the way, that was somebody's computer store that they just kicked in there and blew up for no reason.
Support small businesses, Michael Bay.
Come on. I know it's not an Apple store. But and then Optimus shows up late all the time. He either shows up just in time or completely late. This is the scenario where Sentinel Prime blasts one of the Autobots in the back, like just not even trying to be covert about it. Just in front of everybody. And then starts fucking up everything. They steal the one pillar they need, or the pillars they need. They need them to set up to bring Cybertron back. You find out, and then, God, I think they cut to another scene with the parents after all this.
Yeah.
Like we get this crazy betrayal, awesome action scene on the freeway, and then we're like, the last thing we needed right now was goofy parents. What are you doing? And a joke about why you broke up with her and you need to make her come.
Right. Yeah. So here's.
Sorry, I just get so angry.
No, let it all out. You were just like, clip 10.
Not the parents!
That's the last time we see the parents, right?
Yeah.
That's the end of their...
Well, I think he says, like, you gotta get out of here later on. He calls them.
But if you can't figure out like
11 minutes
a satisfying way to exit your characters from a movie, you don't need those characters.
Yeah.
If you're just like, the last time we see them is doing like a bit in their RV, they're so unnecessary.
Oh, yeah.
If now I'm like blanking on who's the boss?
John Malkovich.
When John Malkovich, the last time we see him, he's in the apartment and he's like, ooh,
see you later. And you're like, wait,
you're like, what?
Yeah.
Why do we have him?
No.
Like, we could have very easily just opened the movie on Sam in the mailroom.
Yeah.
We didn't need any of the stuff. He could have been miserable in the mailroom. We didn't need any of that. It could have been a 2-hour movie. It could have been about the Transformers.
Oh, yeah.
And that's all.
Because every time it's about the Transformers, it's awesome. When Megatron full on blasts the Lincoln Monument like a dick.
And then
he sits up there in the chair. It's so awesome.
I almost texted you because I was like, how did he only blow up Abe Lincoln and not the chair? That's amazing.
He set it to just like the perfect blast to just blow up Lincoln. And then McDreamy gets all pissed. And we find out that McDreamy, a.k.a. Patrick Dempsey, has been working with the Decepticons because he inherited this from his dad. His dad was working with him. And he's like, well, I have to, too. They're going to kill us all. And can we play clip number 11? Because he gets really pissed when Sam turns down his job offer.
So you show a little respect when someone offers you a job.
You know, that happened to me. recently, somebody was like, hey, do you want to do some non-union background work? And I was like, well, A, I'm SAG, and
right.
B, I don't, no offense, I'm not trying to be an ego about things. I don't want to just stand in the background and just stand there and pantomime clapping.
Yeah.
And this person went off the handle. I won't say who, but it rhymes with Schmeichel Schmey. And he just was like,
so you show a little respect when someone offers you a job.
And then I was like, all right, I'll stand in the background. Well,
okay,
sir.
Here I am.
Here I am.
He was like, you know, it'd be cool.
If you look in Transformers The Last Night, I'm just in the background terrified.
That was your last night. your last night as a non-union background
actor. Yep.
Why is he using non-union?
I don't know. Just made it up.
True story. What?
It was a true story.
It was based on a true story. I was actually at a stoplight the other day, and some guy just started squeegeeing my windshield, and I was like, "Nah, man, I'm good. I'm can see fine. I don't have any like ones." And he like told me to roll down my window, and I rolled it down, and he yelled at me.
So you show a little respect when someone offers you a job.
You know, there was a massage parlor I went to once.
And
it was really relaxing.
Tweet out the details later.
It was so nice. And then they were like, flip over. And I was like, cool. And they start getting a little too close. And I'm like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm like, I'm good. Like, I'm a little bit of a germaphobe. This is kind of weird for me. I don't know. You should wear gloves at least. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they were really upset. And they just looked at me and they were like,
so you show a little respect when someone offers you a job.
I tried to slip hand in there. So
I mean, that's what they do.
They did.
They try and slip hand in there. And then after this, we can move on. But I was I was working at a restaurant several years ago, and we had an applicant come in who was actually the brother of Apple founder Steve Jobs.
Oh, yeah.
He was Chris Jobs, and he was just looking for, like, he came in looking to be a bartender, but he had no experience, and we were like, well, you can host if you want, and he just, like, crumpled up his resume, and he threw it in the air, and he was like,
so you show a little respect when someone offers you a job!
He's referring to himself in the third person.
I like that.
He's like, all right, yeah.
Hey, Jobs.
Yeah, hey, Jobs.
So let's skip ahead a little bit. So the Decepticons take over, and they threaten to bring Cybertron to Earth. They threaten to destroy Earth if the Autobots don't leave. And so, of course, the logical thing for humanity is to say, our only hope, I'm sure these bad guys, as soon as the only people who can defend us leave, will let us be.
Probably.
And Optimus Prime drops some after-school special knowledge on Sam right before going in the space shuttle. Can we play clip number 12?
Remember this. You may lose your faith in us, but never in yourselves.
What?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. It doesn't fit that moment at all.
It doesn't fit that moment, and also, like, has Sam not believed in himself? Like, he's the cockiest piece of shit. Like,
he's the most entitled asshole. He's
talking to the wrong dude here. Sam's like, no, you guys can go. I got this.
Yeah. It's so ridiculous. So then they leave. And then, of course, Sam has this device on him that's going to blow him up and kill him if he doesn't find out their plan to fight back. And Optimus says that instead. Then the shuttle's destroyed. We find out later they hid in one of the compartments. But then they hide for a very long time, while the Decepticons, over the next 20 minutes, destroy Chicago, kill millions of people, destroy buildings, destroy infrastructure, destroy houses, bring down these pillars all over the world to bring... The whole thing is they're going to bring Cybertron to Earth to make us slave labor on Cybertron. I don't understand. Here's what I don't get.
Please tell
me. So, does Cybertron, if it comes to Earth, does it just knock us out of our atmosphere and take our atmosphere, or do they, like, transport us up to Cybertron? And if so, does Cybertron have an Earth-like atmosphere? Or do they bring the metals? What?
Gravity. What? You know what I mean? Like, if you get masses that are that big
what
next to each other,
it's
disaster. It would also throw off our rotation around the sun, which we rely on.
The Decepticons didn't really think this through.
Yeah. The other thing here...
How is that going to save their planet?
Here's what I was thinking the whole time.
Yeah.
Why? So... They have these columns, and the main one they decide to put in Chicago, a major metropolitan with lots of people. But this teleports you, right? This takes you anywhere you want to go.
Yeah.
Why not go into the middle of nowhere where they're not destroying. Do you know what I mean? Like, they've killed a bunch of potential slave laborers. They've also ruined a lot, like, yeah, I said, a lot of our infrastructure. Yeah. They've made it easy for people to gather and fight.
And to hide.
And to hide.
Yeah.
It just doesn't, it didn't make any sense to me. Like, they should have just put it, like, over the ocean, yeah, or something like that.
Like in Man of Steel? Because, yeah, they did that with the machine.
Oh, yeah, but like,
and all these movies, these movies have some beam of light hitting the sky that they have to. I love that out of the hundreds of pillars, if the one gets destroyed by Bumblebee and the, right, whole thing gets fucked.
So this is like my main pet peeve of science fiction is like when they create a fake solution to a fake problem.
Yeah.
And it's like, here's a fake problem, and we have the only way to stop it is to do this one thing.
It's surprisingly easy.
Why is this such huge evil, but there is always exactly, yeah, one way to stop, yeah, it? Yeah. Why, if it's so evil, why don't you just create a perfectly evil thing?
Yeah. You know, it's, I mean, so bizarre. That happens constantly.
Just create a network where they have to destroy all of them.
So millions die. The Autobots show up. They wreck a couple Decepticons. They literally just tear them apart, and they go, they say something like, "Oh, we're going to rip you to shit." And they're just, again, imagine if Batman showed up in Dark Knight Rises and just started ripping Bane's goons' arms out. You'd be like, oh fuck. So anyways, can we play clip number 13? Because Optimus isn't fucking around anymore.
We will kill them all.
All right. So again, if this was a movie just about Transformers and Autobots versus Decepticons, and you see Optimus go from this upstanding, freedom-loving hero to kind of a murderer,
yeah,
and dark, and having to do this for a reason to save humanity and to save his race, you'd be like, fuck yeah, but it just feels kind of like mean. You're like, Jesus, all right. And then this is his justification of why they hid. Can we play clip number 14?
Your leaders will now understand. Okay. Decepticons will never leave your planet alone.
No shit.
And we needed them to believe we had gone. For today, in the name of freedom, we take the battle to them.
Yeah. Okay.
Sort of.
And then the next thing is he's like, we needed the element of surprise. And the very next scene, Bumblebee and Sam crash into where they're keeping his girlfriend hostage, save her, and then Patrick Dempsey runs off and goes, Autobots are here! And so it's like, all these people just died so you could just save the girlfriend and then immediately blow your cover.
Yeah.
Immediately. Because then the next thing, they're driving down and Optimus loses his flying jetpack that's in the back of his trailer. And they have to distract Shockwave, which then they brutally murder Q, the scientist. And they're like, they shoot him like 6 times and murder the other Autobot with their space guns.
Save your bullets.
And then they finally start fighting back, and Shockwave has this awesome scene where the humans are coming there. Fuck, we have so little time to cover, like, the best part of the movie. Damn it. Do you have any extra time? Even 2 minutes? What do we got? Yeah! All right, so this final battle sequence is fucking awesome, because the humans are trying to get to a high vantage point to shoot down the tower.
Yep.
So they go in this building. Shockwave sees them. Shockwave sends his Tremor Transformer up, and first they shoot the building. This is the hardest building to destroy, because they blast it starts tipping, the thing creeps up and basically like boa constrictors it, and there's this amazingly way over the top, too drawn out sequence that works still, where they're like sliding through. First the Decepticons come in, and there's just like a scout, and they run from him, and their brilliant idea is to jump out the windows,
yep,
and then slide down the side of the building, shoot the glass again, and fall into another area.
Yep.
I love it.
I loved this whole sequence.
This is the kind of stuff that I will forgive its ridiculousness, because I fucking love it.
Yeah.
It's so silly.
I mean, this is what Michael Bay is good at, is, yes, being creative.
With his action.
With his, yes, action in his environment.
Yes.
Like, using what he has to make something we've never seen before.
Yeah. I've never seen that. I've never seen so many people falling and sliding out of a building.
I also think they were like way too hard on the guy who was supposed to shoot the column.
Yeah.
Because, and Shia LaBeouf goes up to him and he's like, if you don't shoot it, we're all going to die anyway. And he's like, yeah, but I'm still like under attack. Yeah. So this is a little nerve-wracking.
Or how about the parachuting guys? This is another example where the helicopters are getting shot down and they're all coming in like gliding in.
Yeah.
and there's one dude that gets caught on the helicopter, and like six of his buddies just fucking bail on him. They just run out and go like, there's a guy like, oh shit, oh god, and they're just like, see ya, and then the helicopter blows up,
it's,
and you're like,
it's no man left behind except
that guy,
except in hang gliding.
That guy was a dick. Let's be honest.
That guy, he took people's food out of the fridge, even though it was labeled. No one liked him.
Then Starscream shows up, and there's Optimus Prime doing a Deus Ex Machina. He's always there right in time. He cuts Shockwave's Tremor Monster in half, and then it just dies pretty easily. But it's awesome, because he's like flying up, he shoots through the building, and he goes through, and he chops the thing in half, and it looks cool as shit. And then Sam's fighting Starscream, and he shoots him in the eye with the thing, and he's getting flung around. His arm would have been ripped off by that, sure. By the way. He was getting flung around like crazy. And then he shoves the bomb in the eye, and he's still stuck there. And, of course, Bumblebee shows up just in time to save him. Where the fuck was he this whole time?
He's waiting for that moment.
He's just saying, Sam's got it. Sam's got it.
He's nope. Like, I know my role here.
It's so ridiculous.
To wait this out.
And then they're about to execute Bumblebee, and then the robots in space start the little tiny ones have been up in the mothership. They start tearing shit apart, and the one's like, yeah, we gonna die. And then the thing just crashes. That distracts them long enough for them to... Bumblebee has an amazing sequence there,
yeah.
Where he puts on his armor mask and uppercut shoots one of the Decepticons through the face, and it's fucking great. And then Megatron, I actually wrote, right before he showed up again, I was like, where's Megatron been the last 40 minutes, you know, since he's the main antagonist?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, he's been sulking by the side of a building with a cloth over his head, like he just needed a little bit of sweat break.
Well, he was fooled.
He was fooled.
Poor guy.
And then this is how Rosie... We got to speed it along. Sorry, I know I'm rushing through the best part, everybody. I'm sorry, but we got stuck on the ridiculousness. Can we play clip number 16? This is how Megatron is convinced to fight back.
In any minute now... But Sentinel's bitch.
And that's the last thing he wants to be. Let's just hit a few points real quick, because we have, like, no time. McDreamy gets cracked in the face with a cement block, yep. and then electrocuted and yep. dies. Sentinel gets attacked by Megatron, Megatron, and then he's, like, wounded, and Optimus has no arm left, and Megatron's like, yeah, maybe we can work together, let's do a truce, and Optimus goes, nope. Shoves a spear through him, spins around, rips his head and his spine out, Mortal Kombat style.
Yep.
Then we have Sentinel's plea. All right, play clip number 17. I promise we're almost done.
Optimus.
He's dragging and, like, bleeding and done.
The survival of our race. You must see why I had to betray you. You didn't betray me. You betrayed yourself. No, Optimus!
Just full on... Tony Soprano style murders yeah. him.
Not to like nitpick, but he did betray Optimus.
He did betray him. But I mean,
I think
again,
he's being generous
again,
there, saying that he didn't.
Again, imagine Joker at the end of Dark Knight when he's hanging there and he's defeated, and yeah. Batman just goes and walks off.
Right.
We're gonna play one. I promise. This is the last thing. Let's just play clip 18. This is the epilogue VO. This leaves it open for a sequel. Oh my God! There's so much to cover in a 2.5-hour movie.
In any war, there are calms between storms.
You fought bravely.
There will be days when we lose faith, days when our allies turn against us. But the day will never come that we forsake this planet.
Except the time, except the time when you hit in a spaceship yeah. and forsaken the entire city of Chicago.
Right.
Other than that, ladies and gentlemen, I had so much fun. I'm sorry we had to rush the third act, which is the greatest action scene of the... That part is awesome. We had to make fun of the ridiculousness leading up to it.
It should have just been that.
Fuck,
it should have just been
There's
that.
So much I love about this movie and so much I hate. I can't wait to see The Last Knight to see how much... If it's... Which way the pendulum swings. If you've seen Last Knight, don't spoil it for me, but let me know generally if you liked it or hated it. What's your favorite Transformers movie? What should we do next week? I think we might be taking off because of 4th of July. I'm not sure yet, but let us know what you want to see next. Jesse, where can they find
you can find me at Too Much Jesse Twitter and Instagram for sketch. You can find me at The Prom Losers.
I'm at The Ben Begley on Twitter and Instagram. At Guilty Movie Guys is our Twitter handle. Follow us, like us, leave a YouTube comment, follow us on iTunes, all that good stuff. Until next time, what is your guilty movie pleasure?
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.
views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of the Popcorn Talk Network or its owners or principals.